You have found the Business Broker Growth Show with your host, Jason Cutter. This is the podcast for brokers who are ready to stop hoping for deals and start growing their pipeline. Our goal is to bring you strategies, stories, and insights that will be a catalyst to move you quickly from transactional deal makers to trusted advisors. Time for Business Broker Growth.
Hey everybody, Jason here with Damian Weinstein. We are back for the after show. Damian, welcome back. And how was the first part for you? I always like asking that in the beginning here.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you. It was great. I know we covered a lot of grounds and took some twists and turns, but I think mission accomplished in terms of some of the things that we wanted to speak about. I know we hit some of the growth hacks, and I know one of my hopes from this was for people to think about lawyers in a different way. And if I could convince even just one person that we're not all terrible, we're not all aggressive killers, mission accomplished on that front, hopefully.
Yeah. And for people tuning in case you're starting here, make sure and go back and listen to the main conversation, the first episode we recorded, because there's so much. If you want to know some behind the scenes, if you want to know what it takes for someone to be an effective transactional attorney, what they look for, how they're different than the other attorneys, Damian's path from thinking he wanted to be a litigation attorney to going, no, that's not for me. I want to live and work and operate in a different realm, and including your growth tips, which are probably the antithesis of what they wouldn't teach in law school either for growing a law practice. All of that's in the first episode, which is amazing. So what I want to do here is I want to kick off where we'd normally have done in the main part, but we're having such a great conversation. I moved it to here and let's talk about the deal that got away. So this is the lessons of the lost deal. And like I say, every time on the show, it's fun for me because I love learning that from these. And I think these are great cautionary tales. It's usually not fun for my guest because the deal that got away represents something that ended and didn't go all the way through and probably cost time and money and energy. And so it's not really the most fun on your side to think about, but these are always great opportunities. And especially from your side on the attorney side is a different example than most of my guests on the broker side, where their experience or their challenge or what they saw as the friction is different than yours. So when you think about this deal that got away, what comes to mind as a group of cautionary things that have happened?
Yeah. Thank you for that. So yeah, I'll talk about one that, in mid-July or towards the end of July. So this was probably early spring, late winter. We had a transaction, modest-sized transaction, nothing too crazy. We were on the buy side, and our client was a group of three investors who were looking at this company and had done the LOI on their own, which, we were fine with, was good enough, right? Good enough to make something work out of it. And did their due diligence. We were involved a little bit with their due diligence. Things looked good. And then it was time for drafting, right? Which if anyone listened to the first segment, we were kind of talking about the due diligence is really like, that's the beautiful part, right? That's where you can uncover the twists and turns and the things that we have to think about. The drafting, there's going to be back and forth, right? There's going to be red lines, negotiations, but it shouldn't really be too crazy. We oftentimes even price it that way, right? That's not the heavy lift in the deal. The deal that got away, we, and again, this is kind of going back a little bit to what we talked about on the first segment, but the lawyer on the other side, I will not name any names, of course, very good person, very nice person, honestly. I actually like them on a personal level, was in over their head. They were not a transactional attorney. They did not. It's funny. I was about to say they didn't know what was market. And every time I say that, like the people that are listening, there's no such thing as market. And the other people are like, commiserating with me. Putting aside the truth of that, didn't know what was standard. I'll use that term in a purchase agreement, right? Didn't understand that certain things really aren't necessary to negotiate. They're just kind of there and they're there for a reason. They're important, but they're not really controversial, right? And this attorney just didn't understand that. Again, I don't think I've seen the deals where I think the other attorney really is trying to generate billable work and just try to get as much from their client as they possibly can, especially on the sell side, because they assume once these people sell their business, I'm never going to hear from them again. So I might as well get everything I can. I don't think that was this attorney. But this attorney did need explanations of what things like reps and warranties were for. Once we spent about a week explaining what reps and warranties are, you know, that there's no tax deficiencies, tax liabilities, and impending tax judgments or matters, you know, then it was like, well, let me just add to the best of my client's knowledge. And it's like, well, do you know what that means, right? And then we were going back and forth on that for about a week. And then it was, okay, well, if I don't need that, then I need the, you know, there are no material tax deficiencies. Well, now I have to ask the question, are there any tax deficiencies that aren't material? I'm using this as an example, but this is a real life example. You know, 2.5-3 weeks into it, we haven't made a lot of progress. And we're fighting with this attorney over things that really should not be for this transaction, right? There are deals where I think that those, maybe, you know, those issues might make more sense and might be more reasonable. Not this deal. This attorney just couldn't understand that, you know, in a purchase agreement, you know, sometimes 70 or 80% of it is kind of standard stuff, maybe tweaks a little bit here and there. It's that 20 or 30% that you really have to focus on. And there was no distinction there. And it caused a lot of back and forth. It caused a lot of, we do weekly, sometimes twice a week, updates with our clients on a call about where things are, what the next steps are of the deal. And imagine being a client who's paying by the hour to a firm like us, understandably frustrated, saying, it sounds like we're not really making progress with this other side from the last week, from 2 weeks ago, from 3 weeks ago. And by the way, all of this is requiring phone calls and emails and red lines with the other side unnecessarily. And long story short, and again, I'll gloss over some details there, but we can unpack it. Our clients got sick of it. Understandably, they didn't want to pay more in legal fees. And we were kind of telling them, hey guys, you know, you're already sunk into this thing, but you got to think about pulling the plug at some point, because I don't see an end in sight. And I don't necessarily see an easy way to resolve this anytime soon. And quite frankly, we've learned enough about how the other side operates that I don't even know if you still have a good taste in your mouth about doing this deal, because I kind of don't. Ultimately going to be your call, client, but we're kind of getting those bad vibes from the other side. And they pulled it. We kind of, you know, it's very rare we'll advise a client to just walk away. We have before. This was one we kind of said pros and cons here and there, but we would completely understand and wouldn't necessarily be surprised or upset if you do. We'll figure out the fees. We'll work on something, because they shouldn't have had to pay for us basically having to educate the other side's lawyer on these things. And we did. We came up with something that was fair to them and you know, helped us, you know, recoup some of our time spent on it. But by no means do I think it would have been fair to bill them for all that time. That's just not that's not how we operate. And they walked. And my understanding is that that company still hasn't sold. This was what I'd say about probably April or May or so. Still hasn't sold, that they're even in contact with a potential buyer. It's the deal that got away from the client, but I do think that, and again, it's easier perhaps for me to say, I do think it was a good learning lesson for the client, a painful one and a pricey one, and hopefully one that they learn once and then that's it. But you know, the point is, you know, to bring it on home, the point is what we talked about kind of in the first segment, which is a lawyer on the other side who, you know, good person, but M&A is not what they do. Transactional work is not what they do. They got in the way of two clients who wanted the same thing, and they blew it up because they frustrated their client. They definitely frustrated our team, and they for sure frustrated our client, who is kind of footing the bill for us having to fight things that we shouldn't have to fight, explain things we shouldn't have to explain.
Yeah, it's so hard to hear that and so frustrating, I'm sure, on your side. And then I'm thinking, because you said it's that business still hasn't sold, like you were working on the buyer side, the seller still hasn't sold the business. And where does the seller and or the seller and their attorney blame you and or the buyer for it not going through, right? Instead of taking responsibility, where the seller doesn't understand that they hired a non-transactional attorney who just made things so difficult that it was never going to happen, right? Like, there's just going to be one thing after another. And that's wild. I mean, I think, you know, every business broker I've spoken with, like, their biggest fear is the non-transactional attorney be involved on either side. And, you know, this is just a very clear example of what that looks like, especially from the buyer side when that happens.
Yeah, it's a real fear. It's a fair concern that brokers have. I mean, we spoke about it in the first segment of, like, you know, the irony in a transaction is you want the best possible attorney with good resources and a good firm behind them on the other side of the deal, because they will get it done. They will move it along. They know what to negotiate. They know what not to negotiate. And that's, I think, sometimes just important. And this is a good example of it. So it's a painful lesson. I feel bad for the, I feel bad for everyone involved, because I'm sure, again, I don't take these things personally. I'm sure the attorney on the other side, who we had a nice relationship. It just, it was kind of crazy how he got involved. You know, I'm sure he's probably doing some thinking through on his end of, like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have said yes to that one. I probably was a little bit out of my comfort zone. It's, I think, a good learning lesson for everyone, but like all learning lessons that are good and worth it, you know, you pay a little bit, but you're okay. You're still standing, but you're a little wobbly.
Yeah. And learn some lessons and some things to be cautious of moving forward. So, all right, let's jump into some after show questions. This is normally where we would start the after show. So I want to ask you to think about business brokers, right? So you're on the transactional side, you're on the attorney side, but think about business brokers and the transactions in general in 5 years from now. So 2031, we're halfway through 2026 as of right now. So what will it take for business brokers to be successful and for transactions, let's say, to be successful in 5 years from now?
If you're listening to this and thinking, I need this level of authority, I just don't have time to build it, that's exactly what business broker growth does for you. Most brokers know that they need consistent content, better positioning, and real digital visibility. They just don't have the bandwidth to create it or the systems to keep it going. That's what we do here. We build that whole thing for you. The content engine, the visibility strategy, and the authority signals, everything we've talked about here on the podcast. So if you want to add impact without adding another full-time job to your plate, go to businessbrokergrowth.com to learn more about what it could look like for your business.
And for transactions, let's say, to be successful in 5 years from now.
Yeah. Well, the good news is, and hopefully this resonates with a lot of the listeners, I think the transaction work is going to pick up, especially in that lower middle market SMB space. So there's going to be a lot more deal work to do. I don't think that surprises anyone. I think that the trend is there and it's going to continue for various different reasons. You know, I think, like I said something before, you know, there's a lot of us lawyers out there. I don't think there are as many business brokers out there, but still you have to stand out in a crowded market, right, at the end of the day. Go back to some of the growth hacks of ways to do that. I think getting out there, getting your name out there, showing up as a good person. I think with the increase in deal activity, the increase in perhaps people getting into the business brokerage work, you have to stand out a little bit more. And, you know, that's not your credentials. It's not the college you went to, or it's not even necessarily the number of deals you've done. It's just about being in the right rooms, meeting people, making a good impression, doing the right things. I do think brokers will help themselves if they can align, again, self-serving statement, but I do mean it sincerely, believe it or not, I swear. Align with a good attorney, right? Like, I think if you can, we just talked about the war story of the deal that fell apart, you know, that went away and fell apart. If you can align yourself with a good roster of attorneys, I said an attorney before, but it shouldn't be just one, because there's different attorneys who are even better for different deals, right? A transactional attorney isn't necessarily the right transactional attorney for every transaction. There's different issues and things involved. Get a good roster of people that I think will be a really good resource for your client. It's a good way of giving without necessarily, again, getting anything directly in return for it. You know, I do think educating yourself on the nuances of the deal and what to expect. We sometimes find that some of the brokers that we've worked with who are newer, less experienced, they're not as familiar with it. They'll kind of tee up what a transaction looks like. And then an introduction is made to an attorney, and the attorney is like, I appreciate that, but that's not exactly how it works. I think we tried to dispel some of those things on the first part of this podcast, but really kind of understanding what that process is so that expectations are consistent throughout the transaction, including when the lawyer's getting involved, the CPA is getting involved, and things like that. In an ideal scenario, right, the broker is kind of that first line of defense. So they have a really hard job, admittedly, but a really important one of kind of explaining to the client, here's what the next, you know, 2, 3 months, 4 months, whatever it is, are going to look like, right? Here are the types of things that are going to be discussed. Here are the types of people you're going to have to talk to, the issues you're going to have to deal with. Here's what's going to keep you up at night. And just kind of being real with people. I do think that the managing expectations in that way, while also showing, again, that human side to your approach, I think really goes a long way. And I think clients value that.
I love it. And I think all that's important, like all wrapped up into the, like, what can brokers do in the future to be successful, what they can do now, you know, especially your points about increased transactional volume, like they're out there, increased brokers, yeah, making sure you stand out, making sure you're present, making sure you know what to do, and how to handle those, align with good partners. And you said on the lawyer side, and I appreciate the fact that you said not just you, but like there's different layers, there's different expertise, there's different levels, and then all parts of it, right? Like the CPAs and the wealth advisors, and, you know, just kind of building that roster of the team that as needed in transactions or in relationships. Be like, well, I've got a person for this here. I got this. Like, let me just help you and be that connector and be that value provider, like you were talking about in the growth tips. So I think that's amazing. Now, let's talk about this is the part kind of I teased in the first segment, because I know when you and I spoke before, like, this is an important thing. So it's usually two separate questions, but I'm going to kind of tee it up for you on both sides, which is biggest lessons you learned last year or in the last year and a half since we're halfway through 2026. And then what are you most excited about for the remainder of this year and going into next year? And I know for you, one of the big transitions that you've had is going from practicing attorney to managing partner. Yeah. So less about being the player on the field and being more of the coach and the managing partner and being involved and separating yourself and from that or moving yourself to a different role. And so talk about that and that evolution that happened for you and then what's next in that role, or, you know, what you're excited about.
Yeah, there's a lot there that we can unpack. Should I start with, maybe the learning lessons from the past year or so?
Yeah,
or?
Let's do it. Okay. Yeah.
Aligning with other really good professionals. I've always preached, like, surround yourself with good people. And good is kind of a broad term, right? But good means that they're good people on a personal level, but they're also good at what they do. They're knowledgeable. They subscribe to perhaps some of those growth hacks about giving freely and helping others out. We have, as our firm has expanded, our offerings have expanded, and we used to kind of focus on transactional work in a handful of industries. That is now expanded because we have experience with that. But every once in a while, right, a doozy comes your way, right? And due diligence, you find that there's some really strange, regulation out there that is an issue for this client and whatever it is. You, again, going back to some of the things we mentioned in the first segment, you've issue spotted. You don't necessarily need to know the answer. If you can figure it out, great. But you might also just need to know who to bring in to figure out that issue, right? So I think what we have learned is surrounding yourself with the right people. I think personally and professionally is obviously it's a hack for life, right? And it's certainly going to be a hack for business. You don't need to be everything to everyone, but you should have I always use the term Rolodex, but I know no one uses those anymore. You have to have a dense Rolodex, so to speak. I feel like that's a strange term for me to use. I'm 40, but I remember those. The being able to call those people, loop them in, bring them in on a deal, even if it's a, hey, we've got a regulatory issue, it's a medical practice, we need a HIPAA specialist just on this one thing, and they made only 4 or 5 hours on this thing, and then they could, you know, go off to the side, so to speak. Just knowing who to bring in and when to bring them in. First, you got to know who those people are. So I think that's probably the learning lesson from the past year or so. That's helped us really level up the transactional work that we're doing and expand the industries and the types of people we could work with, which is great for business, obviously.
I love it. I think it's important. It's also hilarious to think about the Rolodex reference and the amount of people out right? there who don't know what that means, or maybe they know, but they've maybe never seen one and they don't understand.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. So, it's you have to have it's a always a tax on your cell, right? There you go. There's the modern day version.
There you go. a lot, and the really savvy, smart people, they have them in their CRM instead of just in their cell phone. So, all right. So then, you know, from that, with that lesson, which I love, you know, about having that roster, the deep bench of professionals, the people, the resources, right? Because, you know, the really good professionals understand they don't know everything. They don't need to know everything. They have to be really good at what they know and what they do, and then be able to pull in resources for everything else, right? It's like about having a team. So that's the big lesson you learn, which I think is great, especially as your firm's grown. And now, you know, your role and looking to the future, what you're most excited about.
Yeah. In terms of kind of fusing those things together, you know, we are very, very bullish on just the what I mentioned before, that kind of lower middle market, SMB transactional space. There is a lot of deal volume there, and enough conversations we've had in the last 6 to 12 months of people saying, you know, I'm not there yet, but in the next 2, 3, 4 years, I really want to exit, or I want to do this, or I want to do that. There's a lot of activity to come. And so your broker listeners hopefully are kind of salivating at that, as they should. I think there's going to be a lot of work for people. I think people can do some really good stuff, work with some great clients. We have no indication that the transactional work, the deal flow, will slow down anytime soon, and quite the opposite. And different types of buyers, you know, we've all heard about the silver tsunami, of course, but we've also, I think a lot of us have run into experience of you're getting a lot of, on the opposite end of that, you're getting a lot of, I'll call them kids in their late 20s who, you know, worked for a few years and are kind of burnt out by this thing. They say they're burnt out. I guess that's to be debated. And they say, you know, to hell with the W-2 concept. I don't want to work for this big corporation. Let me put aside, squirrel away some money, raise some money from friends and family, and I want to go out there and I want to buy that, you know, $500,000 landscape company down the street and take a crack at building out a platform, doing it that way. So there's just a lot of exciting things, I think, happening in that space right now. And the economy and what's going on in the world obviously has an impact on everything, but we have found that that kind of, it's not insulated by any means, but I do think that there's a level of just practical issues involved with that level of transactional of work that it's going to just continue flowing. So I'm excited about being really busy, doing some really good work, working with some new clients, different types of clients. I think that's awesome. And yeah, to your point, you know, my role at the firm has changed in the past year and a half. I'm less in the weeds. Every once in a while, I get pulled back into them and I say, oh, this is kind of exciting and fun. I'm negotiating this term or that term or speaking about this issue. But for the most part, I'm taking kind of more of a managing partner role with the firm. We've built out the deal team. We even have a fun name for ourselves called Deal Team 6. You know, I don't think we're that badass or awesome, but it's a fun way of referring to the team on us, on our, you know, the team at our firm. You know, I really like mentoring. I really like being a resource for people. I also really find that, in transactional work, you know, the attorneys on our team could be dealing with the clients, you know, every day, every other day, whatever it is, phone calls, emails, texts. You know, I love having that Friday afternoon chat with that client and say, hey, we could talk about the deal, but I just want to make sure things are going, you're happy, everything is good. You know, it's just, it's a nice touch base. And it again reminds these clients that, you know, even though we are lawyers and we are deal lawyers, we are also humans and good people behind it. And it lets me serve that role while also, you know, by being out of the weeds on the day to day of the transaction, focusing on my law firm as a business. You know, shocker to some people, but especially lawyers, again, going back to the things they don't teach you in law school. You are a business if you run a law firm and own a law firm, right? People don't think about it that way. And it's kind of like, you know, frowned upon to think about it like that. But at the end of the day, we're no different than any other business out there, right? We don't sell pizzas or sandwiches or t-shirts, but we sell legal services, right? But that doesn't mean that the business concepts that apply to those to those types of companies, and those industries don't apply to us. They very much do. And I've really, really, really enjoyed like being up to my eyeballs and stuff like that.
Yeah. And it's interesting because one of the things you and I spoke about in the past, which this is more of just a headline for people to always keep in mind, right? Like everyone knows this, is the fascinating perspective that business brokers have of what they need in a business that has a good market value and is going to have high market demand is a reduced owner dependency. Then we think about most professional service organizations, let's say lawyers, law firms in general, and this transition that you've made, right? Where it's essentially owner dependency. If you, named partner, are doing the legal work, it's like, then it all kinds of comes to you. And then what can you build as a business? And then I just kind of chuckle and you do as well. When I think of the business brokers out there who are basically telling their potential clients, like, you can't have the business depend on you. And then most business brokers, they're essentially a business just built around themselves, right? And they don't have a business. They really have a job that's, you know, a sales professional role and a professional services role. And so where that evolution, when the time comes for everybody, is to make that next step up. And I just love that you like realize that you got to that point naturally, right? Not forcing it and going, okay, here's the next evolution and step, which is always fun to see and you know, a fascinating next kind of role.
Yeah. It's a really good point. And obviously the owner dependency is an issue for a lot of businesses. Certainly, I'm sure brokers, definitely lawyers, right? I mean, for every conversation I have with someone where I explain, hey, I'm really kind of out of the weeds, more in this running the business instead of being a lawyer type of role, I hear like five people be like, well, how do you do? No, you can't do that. You went to law school to be a lawyer. What the heck are you doing running a law firm? Be a lawyer. So it's like, you know, heresy to some professionals. I think, and I'm sure, you know, CPAs, CFOs, and others kind of can relate to that. But it's super important, right? It's also, you know, there's other reasons to do it. And one of them is obviously just in terms of the work we do, right? If there's one person doing it, you risk being the bottleneck. What happens when I'm on vacation or I'm under the weather or, what the heck? It's a nice sunny Friday here in New Jersey. What if I want to go down to the beach for half the day or hang out by a pool, whatever it is, you know, right? Like I can't do that if everyone is relying on me. So it is interesting, right? Because I still do a lot of the intake and prospecting for our transactional work, not all of it. But I have to say to clients, listen, I'm really enjoying this conversation. We could definitely help you. Here's what that would look like. Would love this opportunity. Just so you know, I'm involved and know what is going on at all times because I kind of need to. But I'm not the one who's on page 7 of your purchase agreement making those red lines. But that's okay because I have really good attorneys who I will say are probably even better deal attorneys than I am. That's why we hired them, who are doing that. They're also at lower hourly rates because they're not the co-founder and managing partner. And you don't need to pay my hourly rates to like, you know, implement that type of, you know, change a typo or fix something like that. Like that's insane. So I think clients do appreciate that. They know I don't disappear. I'm here, but there are, I will say this humbly, but admittedly, I think smarter and better deal attorneys at our firm than myself. They are more readily available. And they're in the weeds. So they know what is going on at any given point. Right. That's kind of the way it should be for various different reasons. And also like they'll just keep things moving along. Whereas, you know, I'm doing this with you. We set aside a couple hours. What if a client needed me to look at a contract on a Friday and I'm like, sorry, I'm doing this podcast, you know? But here's three other people on my team who you know already, they can get back to you today pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I think, you know, one of the things I learned early on and then intuitively just embraced was in a leadership role, one of the best things I could do is always hire people who were smarter and better at me than the role. Because I always knew, going back to the growth tips and everything that was, you know, kind of under the umbrella of abundance, is I always know that there's something bigger and better for me specifically that I can do. Yes. And so it's not a threat to hire people who are better than me at whatever I'm doing now or to support me because there's more or different for me, right? Versus the old school mentality, which is don't hire someone better than you. You got to protect your job security and your fiefdom and just, you know, keep other people at bay so you can always be the smartest one in the room. It's like, no, like the best leaders, the best business operators and owners I know aren't the smartest. They know they're not the smartest. They're okay. They're happy not being the smartest. That's why they surround themselves with smart people so that they're left to do what only they can do. And I appreciate that evolution. It's interesting, again, like just to think about the legal field and the attorneys out there thinking like, why are you doing that? It's why you went to law school, is to be an attorney. It's like, why would you then go run it? And it's like, it's just an evolution. It's just the next step up. But you also have to know the job well enough to be able to manage and lead and, you know, kind of issue spot around corners as an industry and for clients and come in as needed. So it's not like you can just jump to managing partner and boss.
It's really well said. And someone once told me, actually a financial advisor that we're pretty close with, this is probably like 5 or 6 years ago, but I just loved it. Brains on tap, not on top, right? You just need to be able to tap into really good minds around you. You don't need them at the top, right? And I'll say it now for the third time. You know, I think I'm a pretty damn good transactional attorney. I do. I don't think I'm the best. I don't think I'm the worst. But I think the people we've hired that our clients are working with are much better than I am. And that is very intentional. And I will say that every single day. I'll sing it from the rooftops if I have to, because that's really by design. I want the best attorneys that we can get. And I want those people to be working with our clients because our clients are going to have the best possible experience they can get. And that's beautiful, right? And it doesn't need to be me every single time. And it shouldn't be me every single time. And that's for various reasons, including the one I mentioned before, which clients love to hear, which is I'm kind of at the top end, not at kind of, I am at the top end of that billable hour range when we give our billables, you know, our hourly rates. You don't need to pay that. I'm here if you want, if you insist that it be me. you don't need it to be me.
Yeah, I think it's great. One final question, which, you know, we're going to pack a little bit. I'm just curious what you see, especially from the attorney side, the transactional attorney side, but for business brokers, for transactions in general, what do you see as the number one tech shift right now or coming or needed within the transactional space? Let's say just all of that.
Yeah, it's interesting because I feel like we could talk about AI for another couple hours if we needed to or wanted to, rather.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that is the obvious answer, right? I suppose. But, I think, is it like, is your question more of kind of like what in the tech space, like what can brokers be looking into or what could they be doing? Or is it something else? I want to make sure I answer it.
Dealer's choice. It's really like, you know, again, if we think of tech shift, like what's the tech shift coming to business brokerage is generally what I ask. And some people say AI, some people say like, you know, the CRM, some, you know, automation. It could be, I've heard all kinds of different answers. I'm just curious, like when you look at the transaction and everyone involved with the transaction, like attorneys and CPAs and brokers and buyers and sellers and all that stuff. Like, what do you see as the tech shift or the evolution happening or maybe needs to happen?
Yeah. Listen, it's definitely, now that I'm thinking about it a little bit more, it's definitely going to be AI, right? And that's probably not the most exciting answer because that's probably the obvious one for so many. But using it in the right way. I think that is probably more worthy of a discussion than just AI generally. AI is the future, right? Of course. But we implement it. We hope that our clients are implementing it. We hope that the attorney on the other side is implementing it. And for that matter, then we would hope the broker is implementing it, right? In different ways in terms of moving things around, right? We've even seen, you know, I won't name a name, but we've worked with a broker before who put together this awesome, clearly AI-generated roadmap of the transaction. But it was beautiful. And I'm like, I don't even care that I see all the M dashes in there and the little icons. I know exactly what's created by AI. But what that, and hopefully this is kind of answering your question, and maybe it's just a nice tip for your listeners, but like, that broker in the beginning of the transaction put both attorneys and both clients on an email said, here's what we're anticipating this transaction to look like based on this AI-generated roadmap. They didn't say that, but like I said, very obvious, but no one cared. And two things were accomplished, right? First of all, open line of communication for everyone. That's great. I know it's a little iffy with lawyers communicating with clients on the other side and making sure their attorney is on the thing. And some people are more formal about that than not. But like, listen, at the end of the day, again, everyone's just trying to get this thing done. Really good. Brokers, if you're out there, have an all hands call, have an all hands email to set up an all hands call. Send that AI generated beautiful thing that says like, here's kind of what the deal is going to look like, the structure, maybe the issues that we've anticipated, projected timelines and things like that. Again, it's going to go off the rails at some point because all deals do to a certain extent. But that's like a beautiful thing. And when I see that, I'm like, awesome. Because now is the time for us to all talk about, hey, I disagree with that stage. Why? Because we have this issue. Oh, good. Good to know. We needed to know that. I'm glad we know that now. It helps sniff those things out, bring them to the surface, talk about it. And communication is key, I think, in life and business, but certainly in a transaction where you have brokers involved, clients on both sides, attorneys on both sides, perhaps some other advisors involved. Having something like that, I think, is huge, and it's a huge value add. And I think it educates everyone, it moves things along nicely, and it makes someone like myself, and I'm sure others on that email and call, say, this broker really knows what they're doing. I'd like to work with them again.
Yeah. And that I love all of that. And one of the things I take from that too is like, it's the communication. It's the setting things up. It's using AI for what AI is good for. And then, you know, it's also assuming the diagram, the roadmap, whatever that was accurate. Yeah. How it's generated and how quickly it's generated and by who. It matters now because it's obvious. It'll matter less, moving on, right? It's like thinking about in the legal field. It's like, if this document is generated by the lawyer or the paralegal, like, does that matter if it's correct, right? Especially at the cost of what it is. And so, like, every industry has its thing where it's like, it's okay if somebody else does this. It's in this moment right now where, you know, AI is scrutinized, usually because it's just wrong or it's just so off base in what comes out. But if it's accurate and it's helpful and it's giving this visual that probably the broker human would never have created because they're not a graphic designer, nor would they have hired a graphic designer, then it's something that no one would ever have gotten anyway. And so we should appreciate that in that moment, right? Not AI generated contracts, not AI generated, you know, videos necessarily, but, appreciating what it does and then the intent behind it, again, to bring all the parties together. Like, I love that story because I think that's where the technology really helps kind of make deals happen and move them forward.
Yeah, it's so well said. That first, like I said, that first response was like, oh, this is clearly AI. And then immediately I'm like, who the hell cares? If it's good. Yes. And quite frankly, good needs to be good enough, right? It wasn't perfect, but that was actually kind of the point. Like, it generated a conversation of, well, we're also going to have to deal with the bulk sale filing. We need, you know, this issue because this business has a permit to operate business, you know, that's unique to its industry. That wasn't caught in the game plan that AI was generated, but it forced that conversation earlier in the deal, which was beneficial for everyone. The broker was super happy because they're like, okay, now I understand that's going to be a hiccup, but we don't have to deal with that for another 2-3 weeks. But I want to make sure that I keep my eye on that. The lawyers know their marching orders and their plan. It's such a good win-win practice. I don't see it enough.
Yeah.
I rarely see it. I think I mentioned there's one broker we worked with who did that. And kudos to him. He's phenomenal. And I'll make sure that he listens to this because I'll know who he is. But everyone else should just steal that idea because it's great. It's a great idea. It really helps.
Well, the way to know that the word gets around is we'll find out how many people listen to this or watch this and make it to the end of the after show segment two. Right. Because you'll know if you start seeing them pop up more and more a better level of communication. And again, I think this is, you know, when we talk about the tech shift, it could cover so many things. And it's really, when I hear you talk, it's the use of technology to just facilitate the humans doing what they need to do, which is move this transaction forward. forward, right? Like whatever that looks like and whatever it's got to do, like the professionals out there know, like, I've got this ability, I got this tool that can help me do what we all need to do, right? Not do it for us, but like help facilitate this train going down the tracks. And I think that's amazing.
That's the name of the game. Yeah. Use it as a tool, keep things moving, keep the conversation flowing, and literally everyone wins. Everyone is happy. It's a better client experience, and we come back for more.
Well, we will end the after show on that note, which is better than how we started it, by making you sit on the deal lost therapy couch and share a painful experience for everybody. So we'll end on that positive note. And again, Damian, I appreciate you being here, sharing so much. Again, I just appreciate it because I know, you know, time is valuable. You know, I'm glad. I'm really hoping you're not sending me a bill by the minute because you said you would give away some free stuff. You say you do that anyway for your growth dip. So I've, you know,
I'll waive it all.
I appreciate that. Yes. And so, you know, I appreciate all this stuff that you shared here because I think it's so valuable. It's so important, you know, for people to hear and then take from this. And then also really like understand, it's like, here's what I'm looking for in these transactions, whether they can work with you or not, or whether you're a good fit or not. But it's like, here's what it should look like. Here's how it all could go together. And then all the stuff you share in brokers, because, you know, what's fascinating too, and I didn't mention this in the intro, is that with you as an attorney in these transactions, you get a really interesting insight and cross-section of the brokers who are in these transactions, and kind of like how you ended it with like the good ones. And I'm sure you have enough stories of the not good ones, just like the attorney side, is that, you know, you get to see it. So these tips are great for everyone out there. So I appreciate you being here. Your links will be in the show notes, just like they were in the first one. Everyone tuning in, if you haven't figured out by now that you should go listen to the first part, go do that. But if they want to get a hold of you, they can go to WeinsteinKlein.com. Again, the link will be in the show notes. They can find you on LinkedIn. Your email will be in the show notes as well. Once again, thank you, Damian, for all of your time and sharing even more on the second half of the show.
Open book. I love it. Thank you. This was fun.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Everyone tuning in, hopefully you got lots of value from this. Hopefully this helps you with your transactions, whether you're a buyer, seller, another transactional partner in the whole process, business broker, attorneys out there. Hopefully you learned something from this. That's just the mission of what we do, just trying to help with the awareness and education of everyone around these transactions, because there's just not enough out there. And people either make mistakes or don't even know they can get help and don't even know what a business broker is or a transactional attorney. And, you know, that's why we do this. So appreciate you being here. And until next time, stop hoping for deals and start growing your pipeline. Thanks.
Thanks for tuning in to the Business Broker Growth Show, hosted by Jason Cutter. If today's episode helped you think differently about how to build your pipeline and grow your business, share it with another broker who's ready to make the shift from hoping for listings to engineering them. Join us again for the next episode of the Business Broker Growth Show, where brokers become trusted advisors.